Introductions. Most of you have been here already. So, Jana Dur, I'm from IT Services. We're Information Security, little subset. And what we're doing this year is promoting cybersecurity awareness, which is in October. First series, as I said, most of you have been here for the first two, which we talked about current cyber threats. We talked about IT best practices, so free tools that are available, mostly for home users. We weren't talking about for administrators. We hope to, in the future, do a lot more for administrators. So I know there's a couple of you here who have asked for more for low-level training. So maybe, should we have time, not should we have time, we hope to have time to provide a little bit better for the community as a whole. The agenda today, it'll be sort of split into two. One goes into the other. We'll talk about confidential data. Everyone keeps asking, what is confidential data? What is the official definition? What are the risk exposures of data exposure? We've heard a lot. We've seen a lot. We've been in the news ourselves in the last year. What are the best practices, both for administrators and for users? It's going to be very high level. We're not going into the technologies available. There is a guide that I see all of you have taken. So this was basically developed in August, which talks about the best practices. It doesn't really dive into too much of the technologies, but it's mainly focusing on file share. So, you know, you have your map drive where you dump all of your data. Or it does talk on SharePoint, but SharePoint's not really an officially used or officially supported content management solution. I'm not sure if anyone's actually used it here. You probably just all use your departmental shares. Yes, center stage too. This is sort of going on it. I think it's going to become our official content management solution. I'm not sure if that's been promoted, but that's coming too, so you'll be using that a lot of times. It just has a lot more than a file server. A file server, you just dump here, you'll have a lot of metadata, you can do a lot of reporting, just it's a lot more feature rich. That'll then bring us into cloud storage. And we know that a lot of people on campus are using consumer oriented. We're not talking about an enterprise solution. I don't think anyone's had a look at that, but people want to know how they can share their documents with people outside of the university. The needs and benefits of it, what are the security risks, and there are a lot, as well as considerations. I'm not going to be able to tell you what's the best consumer-oriented product. There's too many. What you'll get out of this is that if you're using it for enterprise data or institutional data, don't. So we'll talk about why you shouldn't. And if you have any questions, ask along. If you've been to my sessions, these are hour-long sessions that usually go a little over. So if you have to leave, I completely understand. And if the slides should be up by the end of the week, as well as the lecture recordings. So let's dive into what is data. What is confidential data? We don't have an official definition. This is basically taken from a EDUCAUSE, where we have a lot of sharing of all the different universities. So it includes both sensitive personal information and sensitive institutional information. And who says what is sensitive institutional information? Data owners. We don't define it. It should be defined by the data owners. Usually it's the high levels of the various departments. So students would be enrollment services, HR, and so forth. Alumni. So what is personal confidential data? It basically may result in significant invasion of privacy. So a lot of us are, when students apply, we have their SIN numbers, we have a whole bunch of information. It's information protected under privacy laws concerning the pay and benefits of employees. We're talking about PII, personal identification information, your medical health, and some stuff that is collected during research on human subjects. There was a reminder that went out from Kathleen Massey, our registrar. And you can go there to actually see this little memo about dealing with personal information, and especially when you're student information. So a lot of profs, when I was a student, they would put up our ID numbers and sometimes even our names with our grades. Can't do that. You can't associate an ID with a name. We have to be very careful how we use data and where we post our data. We're talking about institutional data. So we're talking about stuff that can hurt the reputation of the university. We have anything that could cause problems to financial or planning information. We have legally privileged information. We have invention disclosures and patent applications. again, it's the data owner that's going to basically tell you what is sensitive or not. Most of us are aware of what, when we're dealing with things, they should be telling you how to safeguard your data. So what are we worried about? Data exposures. As you know, we were in the news back in March. We want to be careful that we don't damage the university's reputation. We have to make people aware of the data that they're using, how they're managing it. We know that theft, insiders, the number one threat. They're the ones that have access to the data, right? Someone's disgruntled, they'll take the data. They'll take it with them. They'll post it anywhere. It's very easy. We're going to see about cloud storage. Upload it. Most of the time, we don't even know that they're handling or taking of data. We have inadvertent exposure. So we're talking about not looking at management rights. Someone has access to something inadvertently that they shouldn't have. Neglect. We throw out our hardware, right? So we have a PC. It's old. We don't wipe the data on the disk. And how many of us store everything on our disk? Even though we say we don't, we still have a lot of information on there. And then we have insecure practices. So whether it's basically answering phishing emails, providing our information, you name it. So why is it important to safeguard our confidential data? Well, again, we damage the university. There's a lot of problems. It's a lot of work if a lot of information goes out. We know that some of our resources are managed by IT services or by other admins on campus. If you don't know, you should figure out what you should do. You should really learn about the data that you're handling. You should figure out how should we safeguard it. Are you encrypting your data? Should you be storing it in any particular places? We all have a responsibility to protect institutional data. We can't rely on just one person, one unit. We don't know all the data that's out there. So it's important that everyone's aware of it, that you ask your managers. Yeah. Yes. People who are responsible for the data.
So your enrollment services, the trustee, I don't see our role as providing, you know, clear understanding how to safeguard confidential. I mean, we're very concerned about the data. But I have a little bit of a problem saying it's our role to ensure the user.
No. You're technically not the data owner. The data owner would fall on Kathleen Massey more than likely. So she's the one telling you. So there's usually one person responsible or maybe a higher level of unit. They're the ones that should come up. We don't have a classification scheme. I know a lot of universities, you can go and they have this whole chart about all the different data, what are the different levels, class of how you should handle it, where it should be stored. We don't have that. That should be built. It's not yet.
But my point just was that as, say, Kathleen,
yeah.
Designate here.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily agree. We do put out guidelines, but I'm not convinced that it is our responsibility. Like, we'll say to you, don't do this, don't do that. Fair enough. But I have a little problem with provide a clear understanding of how to safeguard confidential data. I think that's actually responsibility of InfoSec.
But we don't know where the data is a lot of times. We could provide high level. I think that's where the problem is.
No,
see, there's sort of a disconnect.
It's a big
there
is.
Area. It is. It is.
And it's just, you know,
the problem is it's not defined. We haven't defined it yet. So I hope to have next year something better for you. But again, we have to realize it's not everyone. It's our responsibility. It's your responsibility. It's everyone who uses the data. Unfortunately, it's not as clear cut as I'd like it to be. This is all I can offer for now. Hopefully, as I said, we'll have a little more information. There's a lot of stuff going on. So hopefully we'll see a little bit more. I know a lot of we were talking about a lot of our data is outdated. We don't have a lot of information out there for our admins, our users, how to do a lot of things. That should be changing. Don't quote me on that, though. So again, as I mentioned, it's everyone's responsibility to protect the data which they have access to. You don't want to leave data on our desks, right? We want to have a clean desk policy so you don't have a whole bunch of papers with all these information. You don't want to leave your computer open or unlocked and have a whole bunch of information like a student's information or if you're doing payroll, right? You have all that information. It's really important to classify and organize your data. How do we make it simple? If you classify and organize things properly from the get-go, so you have a great folder structure where you know what's private, you know what's public, it's easy to just dump things and it's all done for you. If you don't have that, that's something that you really want to think about. You don't want a really complicated scheme, and we've seen a lot of complicated schemes where public, you think public means the world. No, no, it's public to just our department or public to this one group. Or they have really long names or you really don't know. You organize, you classify. It sounds simple. It's not. If that's done, it makes everyone's job a little easier. You want to reduce access to confidential data. A lot of times we build these structures, they're so old we haven't updated. We just start adding anyone. Okay, you know, you can have access to this. You may not need it, don't worry, but you have it in case. No, no, no. The problem with that is if something happens, and we've seen it happen, someone's going to look at the data. Even though you have the right or access to the data doesn't mean you have the right to look at the data. So we're going to talk about who's authorized to use stuff and what we could do to sort of, you know, implement stricter controls. You want to do periodic reviews of access. I'm not sure if anyone's received an email about doing an IT audit access. Very important. Yeah. I know we have a thing to the end of the year where you're supposed to review things. We started looking, and believe you me, when I started looking at the overall picture, it's a mess. It really is. It's not easy. It's time-consuming. And a lot of times people don't know whose responsibility is it. I can't tell you what's the best way to sort of set up your structure. You know, it has to be good for your organization, your daily functions. You know how things function. So whoever is in charge or the manager, we should all sit down, figure things out. You figure that out, it makes things a lot easier. Especially be careful with students having access to your data. We have a lot of students who work, and then you don't remove their privileges. They leave. There's a little high turnover. That's a big problem as well. So all this, the next section, is basically the document that you have here. As I mentioned, it was published in August, sort of moving forward with rights to our departmental shares. That's where we basically have most of our data now. I know a few of you have talked about moving over to, what is Documentum, the CMS, Content Management Solution. So you can read this article. It'll be a little more in-depth than what I'm going, but I'm just going to take the big points. Again, it's not technical. It's not telling you how to. There are some tools available. Most of you will just send a request to support IT support at McGill.ca to figure out to get a list of your data. However, when you ask for that list, when you actually get the data, what do you do with it? So that's something that we'll have to look at as well. So we're going to start off with administrators. And the simplest thing to start off with is we've got to get away from assigning users, individual users. We want to start using groups. We have Active Directory. You create user groups. You can create roles. So anyone in a specific role would have access to this data. This is how we keep things simple. We were also using individual users. So when I had to clean things out, I was actually responsible for cleaning out our permissions. It was a pain in the butt. You're going through it all. You end up breaking things as well. Yes. Yeah. So we want to keep away from that as much as possible. You want to be able to add or remove users from groups so that if someone leaves, you don't have to go and traverse down all the different folders, right? You remove them from the top of the hierarchy in that one group, you don't have to worry. And a lot of times, the reports that you get are not very detailed. They'll tell you somewhere in this folder structure, someone has access, but to what exactly? And they could have access to a folder, to a file, and you won't know. It's literally going little by, like, manually. It's not a very automated process. Again, as I mentioned, if you have a specific role, it's easy if we classify people in roles. I know there's one department that does that very well. It might not always work out because we wear so many hats. So if you can, you want to base it either on a group or a role. And if someone's role changes, their permissions should change as well. You want to assign permissions as high up on the hierarchy as possible. Don't break inheritance. So you want, basically, you create a top level, you want to inherit all the way down. So every time you create subfolders, permissions are done for you. How many times have I seen you create a high level and then they start breaking down individual? What you want to do is if you need to do that, you would create multiple high level folder structures where you would have the permissions up there and nothing would change. If it has to change, you're going to have some, but you want to just be vigilant. You want to make aware of the changes are. As you'll see in a bit, you want to document. If you deviate from the standard guideline or the standard procedures, document it. I've seen it too where I've had to come in to look at some permissions, and I don't know why they're there. There's really funny names. I don't know what the data is, or I no longer have access to it. Deny permissions. I don't think many people use deny. We usually use permits, so that's a little... It's there if you need it. Just be careful about it. Permissions are cumulative. So I am part of a group that has write permissions to anything in the folder structure. Or let's say just read permissions. And then suddenly, on an individual file in that folder, I have write. What is my permissions? I have read to the full structure, and to that one file, I have read-write. So it's going to add up. So again, you want to take a look. You want to put it at the high level, not the low level. If you keep it simple, it's understandable, right? As I mentioned, we can get really complicated. You don't want to over-privilege. A lot of times, we're like, oh, I don't know what permissions we need. So from the get-go, they give you administrative. They give you full access. What happens? We've seen people delete their whole folder structure. You have access to it. Boom, they delete everything. A restore takes a little bit of time. You want to ask what permissions do they need for their required tasks? Do they need access to this data? If not, you set up a separate hierarchy. When you give rights, you want the user to log out. There's an access token that'll tell you what rights they have to. They want to log out of the application, log out of your machine. Because how many times have we seen people call us, oh, you've had rights, I can't log in, I can't get access to the data. Why? Simple enough is just to log out. Oh, the effective rights. For anyone who has to do this, you would basically go into the advanced permissions of the folder. You can actually see exactly what permissions someone has. We want to do periodic reviews again. What is periodic? Most likely every 6 months to, or at least once a year. This is the first time we're probably doing it, right, most of us? So you want to set up what's the best thing for you. If you have a lot of high turnover, obviously you might have to do a little more than some of us who have the same staff and nothing really changes. Do not enable administrative privileges until needed. Again, if you have, this not only pertains to file servers, but let's say servers themselves. Sometimes we have to grant users access to a server. Don't give them administrative rights if you know that they don't know what they're doing. You want to give them as little as possible. You don't want them to modify anything. And as always, you want to enable a firewall on your workstation. And we talk about the sort of best practices in the previous one, so that applies to everything. You just want to make sure that you don't save a lot of your data on your disk. And I guess we'll go into that. I won't get into it here. So what are some other things? Intuitive names. How many of us want to have like file names that are this long, right? Or then they start using abbreviations, you know, TLAs, right? We want to basically, PIA tells you you have to use your org code hyphen and then your department name so that we can identify a lot of stuff. So if you ever go into look at the departmental shares, most of us have it mapped up on our drives, right? You just click it's not your R drive, it's like your G drive, your Z, or whatever. You'll see if you go to the high up, they have basically named it with our org code. We can identify which group it is. Sometimes we have groups with same names. You can't use special characters a lot of times. So you want to keep, as I said, keep it simple and keep it and make it understandable. Again, public. What does public mean, right? As I said, I would think public is to the world, but for some people it's public to the department. You want to create a folder structure based on the needs of the department. I'm going to show you an example of how ICS, for anyone that's supported by ICS, how they, what their best recommendations are. It might not be best for you. You might have to have multiple high level. Just keep it simple. If you can define it, if you can make a really good title for your folder, it'll be easy for people to put stuff in. A lot of times we hear, well, I didn't know where to put it in, so I just put it into the first place, right? And that place is where everyone has access to. We spoke about organizing, and if you organize your data and your structure, it makes things simple. When to copy and when to move. All right, so some of us just drag and drop, some of us copy. You copy, the file, wherever you copy to, will take the permissions of that folder structure. If you move it, it'll retain the folder, the permissions of the other folder structure. So let's say you go from one that's very restrictive, right, that only, let's say, three of us have access to, a small little group, and then you move it over to another one which is public to everybody, what happens? That'll actually retain those permissions. But let's say you want to go from a less restrictive to a more restrictive, you would then have permissions that are public in a very restricted document. So the rule of thumb is to always copy. Copy will just take the permissions of the current folder structure. Clean up when a user leaves the department. This doesn't happen a lot of times, and I noticed that a lot of us will have our own folders created right? And we have all of our folders there. Or you have your R drive, which is really personal. And you dump all of your files there. Don't dump work files on your personal drive. I believe we have like 1 gig of data where you can dump there. Don't put it there. Why? More than likely, they're not going to look at that. They're going to delete it when you go, and you could have lost data. Or, oh yeah? I know a lot of people who do. Yeah. So you see, when you go right away, you have an R drive. That's your personal space. So let's say you want to sort of take, you have an ebook or a document that you want to take. That's your personal stuff. We're not looking at that. To actually get access to that, if someone leaves, requires several levels of approval. It's a big mess. And again, most of the time, we forget about it. So when someone leaves, you want to make sure that the person who's replaced them has access to their documents, right? Again, as I see it a lot of times, people leave, they dump their data, people don't copy over the data, and they're like, well, I don't have access to this data. How do I get it? Sorry, it's a little too late if you waited a little bit of time. We want to document anything that deviates from how we do standard practices, right? That's how we'll know that everything's set up properly. You want to ask yourself, who is taking the action? What is the action being taken? Why are we doing this? Why are we creating a new folder that's different? Why are we creating this new group? Document all that so that people know. And then a lot of times we do this and then we never use it, right? So if you're not using something, you want to delete it as quickly as possible. This is the structure recommended by ICS. Most of the time, it's not going to fit your everyday needs. So they create something for like shared apps. They'll create a share where they have all their different restricted content. They have one everyone, which means everyone in the department. Or is it everyone? More than likely, it's everyone in the department. And then your user folder. I don't know. Again, do they tell you to dump stuff there? More than likely not. If it's something that's for the department, it's institutional data, it should not be in your individual file or folder. Oops. All right, so now we're going to move into best practices for users. So it's very simple, do's and don'ts. Ask questions. How many times do people come in, they're brand new, right? We mentioned we don't get training. You're on the job saying, hey, start doing your work. Well, how do I do it? What do I do? Again, if you define, if you organize your structure, it'll be easy. You show them, here, this is where you put your personal stuff. A lot of times we mix, our workstations are not necessarily workstations. They're sort of quasi-personal personal computers and that. If you have it simple, or if you don't know, you want to ask questions. Just don't dump things everywhere. Choose meaningful file and folder names, again, even on your personal workstation, because a lot of times the computer stays, you leave, all that data has to be transferred over to someone. We mentioned about copying and when to move. Careful about sharing private sensitive data. We do have some users that actually set up like little mini shares on their computers and start sharing folders. Some people don't allow that. Well, it's allowed other places. You want to avoid that because who are you sharing? What are you sharing? If you're sharing confidential information that maybe someone shouldn't see, or the same thing, if you have, let's say, a student that comes in, right? They're replacing you, or you have a student that just works on your computer. If they have access to that data, because a lot of times they're logging in as administrators, right? How many of us log in as administrators? We have full access to our machine. I know, Debbie. Some people are lucky and they really restrict, but a lot of us can't get our work done. We require.
I just don't understand why in administrative offices,
yeah,
users have access to their local disk. That's,
yeah,
what was my mind in general. So,
well,
our yeah, on that.
If you were lucky enough where you can actually say, hey, this is a work machine, this is not your personal, you can't set up game here at your lunch hour. How many times have I seen people gaming at the lunch hour? Yeah. You can. Oh, yeah, all the time. Yeah, all the time. That's why you can't get in touch with them, right? If you can, most of you that are supported by ICS, especially XP, doesn't allow it. Just because of the way a lot of programs are installed, a lot of you will install. How many people install programs? They buy stuff sometimes and think, no one's going to cop out to that, right? No. We have a lot of departments that buy software and they don't tell IT services. And they're like, well, I bought it and I installed it on my machine because I need to use it. Well, we don't know what it does. To do that, you have to have administrative privileges. Hopefully, with Windows 7, you'll run as standard user so that when they need to elevate privileges, it'll prompt you and you won't have access. Those are the days that we'll love. It'll stop a lot of malware from being installed, but I don't have very high hopes of that, so we'll see what happens. Also, as people change, even though you have a lot of sensitive data, you want to basically remove. Again, we want to review what data we have on our machines, what we have on our file shares, because a lot of times people don't need access to it. And again, I really want to stress, if you have students working with you, you really want to be careful, because they don't always have as much. I mean, if they get fired from a job, they could find another one on campus a little easier than some of us can, right? So if you get fired, that's a little bit bigger than a student. So they tend to do a little bit more. They'll look at a little bit more. Again, you may have access to it, but you don't have rights to look at it. So if you never give them access to the contents, they'll never look at it. And you won't have that information swimming out there on all the various social media sites. Don't. Remember, don't in front of all of them. Don't keep files in folders that you no longer use. You want to do a cleanup. I don't know how many times I've seen folders in my department where we say, to be deleted. And I look at the date, 2005. I say, well, why didn't we delete it? It has gigs and gigs of data. You're not looking at it. How many of us keep all of these files on our machine saying, oh, one day I'll look at it. I downloaded it because I'm going to look at it. If you haven't looked at it over a year, the data is probably obsolete at that point. Delete it. Don't save files locally on your desktop machine or on external media drive. USB keys, right? That's how easy they are to lose. And a lot of times you'll find them on the floor. You find one on the floor, don't plug it into your machine. That's used a lot of times for social engineering. You plug it in, they infect your machine. Be careful about that. You don't want to install applications on the network. You want to talk to your network administrator. Call ICS, call them at IT Help Desk. You want to call whoever supports your IT resources. I remember in the couple of the previous sessions, I said, well, you want to store your data on external media because if something happens to your hard disk, right? We're talking here about users. What I'm talking about is if you're an end user, you want to be very careful about your personal information. Your tax receipts, don't store them somewhere that someone can easily get access to them. You want to encrypt, or you want to basically password protect a lot of these files. You can do that with PDFs. You can do that with most of the Office applications. Just be careful what you store on it and where you leave it. And know that sometimes something could happen to your movable storage, so you might want to have two copies of it. So this leads us into cloud storage in the enterprise. Does anyone here know of any of their users that are using consumer-oriented cloud storage? So they're doing Dropbox, SkyDrive, Google Drive. We got a lot of requests about this. There is no policy yet, and I'll just leave it at that. I can't say anymore. So we're becoming increasingly mobile, right? All of us are moving towards laptops. Some of us like to work from home, off hours, during hours. We're taking our data with us all the time. So they're no longer just in workstations. A lot of times we have physical access to our departments kind of locked down, you would hope. Mind you, the ceiling tiles are easy to move so someone can jump over. But let's say we have, at least for our physical desktops, they're secured physically. Laptops are another story. A lot of us don't have cable locks, so how easy it is. I have a small little MacBook Air. You can walk out with this very easily and conceal it. We've had, although cable locks aren't that effective because they can break it, we've had a couple of laptops stolen where they just basically yanked out. They don't care if a little bit broken, right? We're used to storing stuff on our departmental shares. We talked about this, right? But now people are like, well, I need to have other people access it. A lot of researchers say I need to share my data with other universities. We don't offer that service. We don't have any capability of doing that right now. Other than if they're a vendor, you would create a vendor account. They would then get access to the data, but they would have McGill credentials, which we can then track. The whole purpose of this is to make accessing data, let me hold off. So home users, basically, when they do their stuff, they have their data, they want to be able to access it through their iPhones, through their MacBooks, through their friends, because they want to share photos, share pictures, right? But then they're saying, hey, if I could do that with my personal stuff, why can't I do that with my work stuff? And this is where it starts being problematic. We know that data is everywhere. So quick think, we know about cloud computing or the cloud, which is just a little techno jargon for virtual storage. You don't have to worry about having enough space on your file shares. There's so much virtual pools out there. It's free, so a lot of people like that. They're thinking they're saving money. And they're like, well, you know, it's easy to just basically throw up a file there, and I don't have to worry about using up my quota. A lot of us have very limited quotas here. I don't know if you've heard about the Dropbox race for universities, where they say the more people who sign up to Dropbox, you'll get, instead of your 5 gigs, you'll get 25 gigs. And whichever university has the most signees will get even more content. So what happens, we had all these students start spamming out each other. And they're like, I don't know who they are. Is this? That's wrong. You can't do that. It's a violation of the RUP. You can't send unsolicited emails to students. And the other thing is, how did they get those email addresses? But that's our problem. So we move on to, what are the needs and benefits? So why are people thinking cloud storage or the cloud is the next best thing? Well, here we manage a lot of our systems, right? So a lot of us, we have administrators here. There's someone centrally managing everything for us. We don't have to worry about it. We send in a request. They take care of it. We hope that we have a lot of backup. We have the availability to store so much data and resources to an extent. And we have security controls. We say who can or cannot access the data. Sometimes we may open it up to a lot of people at McGill, but it's only McGill. It's sort of staying within the university, you would hope. Whereas cloud storage or cloud services is not the same thing. So what are users looking for? They're looking to fulfill their needs. They perceive their needs being met by a lot of these cloud storage. And again, consumer-oriented cloud storage. There are some enterprise available. We haven't looked at any. If you are interested, you would have to go through a whole loop. It would have to go through legal, and eventually it would come to us, and then we would evaluate it. So we haven't gotten a request of that nature yet. So we're assuming everyone's using these consumer base. We have a lot of VPs. Hey, it's great. I can share all my information with people. Seamless accessibility. You log into a web page. Some are even have little applications installed, right? They can go from device to device, and they can share it with whomever they want. Sort of an ease of experience. You don't really have that much of a how do I use this product. It's very seamless, very easy. Synchronization between multiple users and systems, so I can share it with my parents, I can share it with my friends, you name it. I don't have to be in any particular place. A lot of us are restricted to just our workstations. We can share, again, with third parties. How many universities? We have all of these different partnerships. We have to share a lot of data. How do you do that? Email is very limited, right? I think you can only send 10 megs at a time and receive 30. Email was not meant to have a lot of data transfer. And we also have quotas to worry about, right? We have, some of us anyway, have limited mailbox storage. Version control. If you're using Center Stage, a lot of times they'll have version control, so you can say each version, you can store a whole bunch of them. So if you want to store a minimum version, so if you do like version 1.1, it's all there for you. You don't have to worry about it. That's not available on your file share, but it is available on the cloud storage. So what are the benefits? They perceive that they're saving money. It's free. Everyone likes free stuff, right? We talked about this. Free tools. Well, this is one free tool you want to really be careful about. Providers claim that they're very secure and protected, but we've seen a lot of problems with them. There was problems recently with Dropbox. There's a whole bunch coming out. I mean, we can't even name it. So they say they're secured, but really, is the cloud secure? These are the questions we need asking. If you hear someone, one of your users that wants to use or is using, this is what you want to ask them. Are you uploading files to the cloud? You kind of want to send out a general communique. Can you? You know, are you doing this? What services are users accessing and how? Are they just using, is everyone using Dropbox through the web or are they using a client? There's another problem. When you have another agent on your machine, there's another vulnerability there. Do the files contain sensitive data? What data are you uploading? Have you gotten the proper authority to do so? Are you encrypting your files? We don't really do a lot of encryption here, unfortunately. I know some departments do. But you want to ask that. If you're putting sensitive data, are you encrypting it? Do you know where your data is archived? So that's a problem with cloud storage. You don't know where it is at any given time. So we're going to split up. So we talked about confidential data as being both personal and institutional. If it's personal, I don't care. You do what you want with your personal information. You just need to be aware of the risks. You want to be careful about your personal identifiable information. You want to be aware of incriminating photos. So you think you could put your photos there and no one has access to them? That's not the truth. You just want to be careful what you put up there. I don't care if you put your photos, regular photos that you just want to share. You put music, you put ebooks, I don't care. We don't have a policy, we'll never have a policy on personal stuff. Institutional data, we can split it up into public, restrictive, sensitive, and research. Research is a whole gray area. So if anyone's here from research, I don't have answers from you. That's going to be a little more complicated. I'm not really sure who manages research data. I'm not sure if it's an individual. So you want to basically talk with your department and see exactly what's the best course of action for you. When we talk about public, you could put public data, right? If it's public, I don't care. It's publicly accessible. You can put it on cloud storage. You can put it on your Facebook site. It's not a problem for me. What we worry about is our sensitive data. So again, the data owner will tell you what's sensitive. Most of us know what's sensitive. Has the data owner been made aware? Are you just as a user saying, well, I think I should do this, right? And who are you? Do you have the rights? Are you responsible if something happens with that data? Right? Most of the time, it's always the data owner who will hold responsibility if the data is ever exposed. There has to be one person accountable for things. And a lot of people don't get that. They think, well, the whole group is accountable. No. If you put that data there, you're responsible, you're accountable, and then there'll be actions against you. So, security risks. Again, here we talk about accountability and risk acceptance. Who accepts the risk? Who will tell you if there's a risk of putting stuff out there? Can you tell me? Can you tell me? No, I can't even tell you. It's, again, the data owner. They're the ones that's going to do the risk assessment. They'll assess, okay, if this happens, they're going to have all these ideas in their head or all these scenarios, what will happen? What if this data gets out there? And again, when it comes to accountability, you're the one signing the agreements with the service, right? It's not the data owner. You are. You're putting up the data. You are responsible. So there will be actions against you. Who has access to the data? So we talked about authorized users if it's part of your daily tasks. The thing we don't think of is that a lot of times these cloud storage providers have access to the data. They have to manage the service. What type of access? They can say, well, we encrypt it. Yeah, but it's sort of decrypted. Is it encrypted while it's resting there? You might encrypt maybe how you uploaded. While it's sitting there, is anyone able to read it? And a lot of times these administrators will have to do it. If this is not enterprise grade, where they'll basically release a lot of their security protections or mechanisms, for the consumer grade, well, there's a lot of people that left the company. They don't publish a lot of information. So in the end, you've just increased the number of people who have access to your data. Again, we mentioned unauthorized access. So if you're storing confidential data in the cloud, did you tell the data owner? If you're storing student data, is Kathleen made aware of it? What would she say? You don't do that. So now that we have restrictions here, so if you have your IT resources, we organize our folders properly so that only the right people have access. Here, who's managing access? It's the end user. I signed up. I've put up this information. I'm the one responsible. I'm the one granting access. The other problem is, you granted access, you're sharing a document. What are they doing with that document? You don't know. They could have downloaded a local copy. It's now sitting outside the university on some person's workstation. What happens then? Are they sharing it with other people? We cannot track that information. Access control management. We have manual access control outside the university. There's no one managing it. We don't have specific groups that are created. You can just add any Tom or Harry. You just give access to anybody. They're not leveraging federated services, so we log in with our McGill username and our McGill password. We have some security requirements which require you to have an 8-character password. But what if you start using any other account? So let's say you do use your McGill email, but you create a separate password. That's not very secure and easily guessable. Your account could get compromised. Someone has access to that data. So again, the responsibility comes to the user and the owner. So the user who's uploaded the data, and in the end, it's the owner who has to take responsibility for this data being exposed. Encryption. How many here actually encrypt files at all? Okay, you know your users. You can do it sometimes very simply, or you can use enterprise-grade product. We talked about full disk encryption, BitLocker. You can do TrueCrypt where you can create a volume. But what you want to think of is, okay, they may say they support some encryption. Well, what type of encryption? There's encryption for when you upload. So, you know, you see the HTTPS. So it's encrypted at least when you transmit it. But what about while it's resting there? A lot of times we only look for the transmission but not data at rest. If data at rest is not encrypted, we have a big problem. You also have to talk about encryption key management. When you encrypt something, you have a key that's created so you can encrypt and decrypt it. Who has access to that key? If you have that key stored where your encrypted container is, what happens? Someone who has access to it will be able to decrypt your stuff. So really, there's no point. There's also shared encryption keys where everyone has the same encryption key. So if someone gains access to it, a malicious user would have access to everyone's data. So where shared resources, you're using shared keys, all of your data. So you may not be the target, but in the end, you're still a victim. Data recovery. What happens if you lose that encryption key? How do you decrypt it? How do you recover it? We can't help you. We're not storing it for you. So we have some people who are actually doing encryption will do central key management, where if something happens, they would then help you out. But right now, you're on your own. Data destruction. We've had a lot of requests where accidentally something gets put on the web. So we have to go to Yahoo, we have to go to Google and say, please delete this. Then you have like the cached mode where you have like a cached version of documents. Please remove all that. We can't do that here. You can't guarantee that they've removed it. Because there's so many virtual pools all around the world, a central deletion does not mean the content is deleted. You will never have any guarantee that the data that you want that's very confidential, that could be detrimental to the university, is deleted. So that's a big problem with these virtual storage. Where is your data being stored? Especially research or when working with personal information, there's data and regulatory compliance. You have privacy laws that say how you can handle data. A lot of times when things stay within Canada, we're not so worried. But what happens when it starts going to the U.S. and outside the U.S.? There are different laws available, laws made for credit card data. It tells you exactly how you can handle credit card data, where it can or cannot be stored. You have the personal information, and then HIPAA if you're doing health stuff, but I don't think we're under Canada actually affected by that. So you got to be worried about that. If you've entered into different contracts with different vendors or different institutions, what are the how can you use the data? Where can you put it? The data is distributed on multiple disks in numerous locations around the world. And in many cases, you don't know where your data is at any point in time. They could say, oh, our data center, all of our servers are in Canada. Yeah, but that's not necessarily true. You might have a sort of a small subset or a backup somewhere else, and that's where it becomes a problem. Lack of enterprise monitoring. So when we're talking about security incidences, if something happens, I can't help you. Something's made available, it's put in the wrong place. Something happens, they're like, you need to tell me who has access to the data. I can't tell you who accessed the data. Why? Well, we don't manage the service. We don't manage the accounts. We don't manage access control. And we can't monitor for a malicious or a suspicious activity. We have tools that allow...